CodPod listeners. This week I got to sit down with jazz bassist, vocalist, and composer Katie Ernst. She's an Eastman alum who's got a bunch of different projects going, lots of interesting collaborations, and she's just super pleasant and fun to talk to. So I'm here with Katie Ernst at her, I was going to say humble abode, but that makes it sound like I'm hating on your place. It's a really, really great place, actually.
We promote humility here.
That's good of you.
Yeah. But yeah, we're at my house.
Yeah, no, this is great. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah,
I very much appreciate it. So just to sort of dive in here, I always ask, how did you first get into music, like as a wee child? Mm. I assume you were a wee child, but...
Yeah, okay. I have two like distinct memories. One is of a little tiny electronic keyboard for babies and being really into that. And the other one is sitting in my parents' brown and brown Aerostar minivan. And there was a cassette player.
Yeah.
And they, at a gas station, they bought a Kenny G tape and they had it in the Aerostar minivan. And I would sit in the back in my car seat or whatever.
Oh my God.
And I would like make up little songs to the songs.
Aww.
So those were the two.
You were just riffing over Kenny G.
Yeah. I remember. No, I like it was very emotional, yeah. You know, as a young person to hear that, those feeling songs.
Ooh.
Yeah. I remember, like, I think I've made this up over the years, but I'm pretty sure one of the songs I made up to a Kenny G song had the words, and I can't go on. As like a really small kid, I was like super into like the heartbreak of what was going on.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Whoa. You were feeling deep things at a young age.
I felt it.
Oh my goodness. Also, I love that you guys had an Aerostar because we also had an Aerostar when I was little. We had a big gray one.
Nice.
It was, you know, all the road trips, all the cassettes, except I think we had a cassette that was like basically storytelling. I think it was Jack Nicholson telling stories about like how the rhino got its skin or like, you know, things like that. And Bobby McFerrin was doing like all of the music underneath, like boop, 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 boop. Like what, cool. You know, I can't do a Bobby McFerrin impression.
That's good. Yeah. It's a direct quote.
It was that and like German boys choirs.
Wow.
Our formative years.
Yeah, to think shaped by Aerostar cassette players. And then excuse me. And then when did you start playing bass?
I started when I was 9.
Oh, okay.
So they had a string program at Napier Elementary School,
and they
had a string program and a band program. And when you were in third grade, you got to pick which. You know, what your destiny would be.
What your destiny.
Yeah. So I wanted to play the flute or the drums because I was both a girl and cool.
Right.
And if I waited in a long line to play the flute.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I really understood that you had to, like, direct the air.
Right.
I thought it was just, like, you blew into it. And so it was like way more
complex.
You're like,
this is way more nuanced than I thought
it
was.
And so I was like, I don't think this is for me. And then I looked at the line for drums, and it was just as long with boys as the flute line was for girls. And I was like, this is just a wash.
Yeah.
So I went with the shortest line to get it over with. And that was the double bass because there wasn't even a line. Yeah. It was just a guy that was waiting for his shift.
He's like, no waiting, guys. Yeah. No waiting. Yeah.
But it was easy because you didn't have to do anything. Very logical.
At that point, it's very, yeah.
So I played Hot Cross Buns and thought I was good at it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sign me up.
And so you kept up with bass, and at what point, obviously you got more into jazz, at what point were you like, I think jazz is my thing?
It was kind of, I didn't have very many like epiphany moments.
Yeah.
But I remember in junior high being like recruited for the jazz band a year early because they needed a bass player.
Right.
And so that I think was kind of like a cool thing to be a part of. So that was like point for jazz.
Yeah.
But there was also, they brought in this guy who did like jazz and strings kind of workshops.
Yeah.
And that was a kind of a step towards like what it felt to improvise and not just play the written part. And I think that was also another like, oh, that
this is another thing that I can do. Yeah. And this mm-hmm. is cool.
So yeah, I think it kind of compounded on itself, and I went to a couple summer jazz camps.
Yeah.
When I was younger, and that kept getting reinforced in that
yeah.
kind of, yeah, that musical worldview
mm-hmm.
got yeah. stuck.
Got stuck.
Yeah.
And you, have you, I mean, obviously, you like you said, you made up like little songs to Kenny G and stuff. Has singing been something that you, I mean, obviously you play and you sing a lot together.
Right.
Which is really, really cool and seems really, really hard to me. Mm-hmm. But has singing and playing, have you always sort of married the two, or was it something that you were just, you liked doing both of those things and then you're like, I should do them both at the same time? I don't know.
I think, well, I took some piano lessons before I played bass.
Okay.
And there was like some component of whatever book we were using
yeah.
that was like, sing the melody and play the...
Right.
So like, I knew that you could play and sing with an instrument.
Yeah.
And then I sang in the school choir
right.
and things like that.
So something you'd been
so
doing
I'd always
for a
yeah
while.
I'd always done both.
Yeah.
I sang jazz for the first time in high school, and that was just singing. But because I was like, I think it yeah again it, not an epiphany moment.
Really. Right. It was just like you'd been doing mm-hmm. the two of those at the same
right.
time, and then they
yeah.
just kind of.
But knowing me, someone was probably like, "I bet you can't do that," and I was like,
"And you're like, hold my beer."
Yeah. 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 So, but I started. I definitely like. While I was getting into jazz music, the two were fused pretty quickly. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a pretty logical pair too, to
mm-hmm.
have the bass and melody components.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's like it's all you need.
No,
in
it
life.
Absolutely makes sense.
Yeah.
And you, I want to talk about Little Words.
Sure.
I only listened to this like shamefully recently, and it's. I love it. It's if I can like gush about it for a second. It's so the music is so beautiful. The words are so beautiful. Can you like explain what led up to this project
yeah.
for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Little Words is a project of Dorothy Parker poetry mm-hmm. that I set to music. And so I use her poems as the lyrics to these songs that I wrote. And it started at the Eastman School of Music. I had written a song as part of a composition class.
Oh, okay.
And it was in 3/4 time, and it had a, it felt like it should be sung.
Mm-hmm.
But in college, I wasn't about to write words and sing them in front of people. You know, like
right.
I'm not ready for that level of vulnerability. I'm trying to be like a strong woman over here.
Yeah.
And so, like a total loser, I Googled short poems
mm-hmm.
on the internet. Like, I'll say that
what
again.
What else are
so
we using?
It sinks in.
I
yeah.
mean, what else are we using Google for? Like, I think that's reasonable.
But I'll like rephrase to point out how insane this is. I wrote a song that needed lyrics, so I Googled short poems
to try to like
so
get
that
some
I could
lyrics.
Just like get some. It's insane.
Shopping for lyrics.
Yeah. No, it was just like, it was stupid. And I like, but it worked because mm-hmm. I found this poem by Dorothy Parker called Anecdote.
Right.
And it's this short little thing that's so silent I when love was by that he yawned and turned away. Now sorrow clings to my apron strings. I have so much to say. And it's like, oh, story of any young lady's life,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But it fit. Beautifully the meter and the rhythm of the
yeah.
song that I had already written. So then I got to accomplish being able to express words to this melody
yeah.
without having to be my own creator of...
Yeah.
Like I could put it off as being like, well, this is someone else singing.
Somebody else's words.
Even though I resonate with that a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and it feels so personal when you have to sing like your own words for something.
Oh, yeah.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't know if I'm ready to expose
Mm-mm.
this
no,
to other people.
Yeah. It's totally it. So, so that I had one nice song and it felt good to mm-hmm. have finally merged my singing with my composing
yeah.
because till then I had been singing jazz standards, but I had been composing other instrumental music that was more modern or just, you know, less of the swinging standard kind. The
bebop kind of.
So that was like the first like, oh, this feels right. And Dorothy Parker is the queen of short form, like rhyming, beautifully strong female voice work. And so I started flipping through all of these different poems, and there's a lot of musicality to them. And I think, but I didn't go right away with like, okay, I'm going to set all of these poems and make a record.
Right.
I think I found that I liked, I think it was a very short song. Again, another really quick, like rhyming poem that was really easy to set to music. So then I had two of them and that felt good. And then, and then maybe a year goes by and I moved to Chicago and I have my Dorothy Parker book open and I'm seeing if I can write another song.
Yeah.
So I eventually ended up with 7 Dorothy Parker poem songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the record because I had this big gig at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I would be a fool if I didn't have anything recorded to bring with me.
Yeah.
So it was really, that was the motivator to get
sort
the
of a
project
catalyst,
together. But it's been a couple years since that project, but I still do it occasionally
at
like colleges and places that are into Dorothy Parker.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was a really important step for me to kind of merge my composer music voice and my actual voice.
Right.
And
your voice.
Right. And kind of learn how to be more of a sincere and vulnerable artist.
Yeah.
I think at that point I needed to sing someone else's words. But the words are like, they're very, they're very... I mean, it's like your heart is open.
Absolutely. It's very, very vulnerable. And
it's like admitting defeat a lot.
Yeah. When I was listening to it, I was like, oh my God, my heart.
Yeah. It's kind of, for as like not depressing as the music sounds, I found the poems that I thought were a little bit more of the real woman behind the Dorothy Parker, like witty exterior.
Right.
She has a couple more like fluffy poems that are just clever and quick, but these seem to kind of
give a
glimpse. Yeah. Maybe the title makes it seem like it's a joke, but the actual content is like, oh, that feels real.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, you also have this trio, Twin Talk.
Mm-hmm.
So, You know, looking at your website, you kind of describe yourselves as like, did you call yourself like co-leaders?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. Yep. How did you guys get together, first of all?
Cool. We all moved to Chicago around the same time, and we all were connected to each other through mutual friends.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you move to a new city, you are really down to play and meet everyone and just
like, please be my friend and play with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think at that time, a lot of people had just come to Chicago and they were looking to like make stuff happen.
Yeah.
And so it was one of many different sessions at someone's house where you just play some music.
Yeah.
So Dustin, who plays saxophone, he got the three of us together so that we could read some of his music. And so I met Andrew the day that we first played.
Oh, okay.
And we started by playing just a standard jazz song, but the way that we played it felt different, and it felt like we were catching quirky things that we probably shouldn't have together. You know, like there was a certain like organic sense of, oh, we
fit.
Yeah. This could be a band.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of just didn't really look back from there. We've been a band since February of 5 years ago, when this is being recorded. So,
it's your 5-year anniversary.
I know. Yeah. So we basically just rehearsed a lot.
Yeah.
And we got music together and we played wherever we could in Chicago. And then we played a little Midwest tour and we made a record. And then we did another little tour out to the East Coast. And we just kind of treated it like a band.
Yeah.
And it's not like we are pretty set on being a collective, collaborative group mm-hmm. without one person who's leading.
Yeah.
Because that's how we make our music.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I think a lot of press and a lot of people want it to be my band because I'm the girl
You're the
in
lady.
The middle.
Yeah.
And so there's been a lot of like, it's not Katie Ernst's Twin Talk, right. You know, the band is called Twin Talk
right.
and the, you know, like, yeah, it's funny how there's such a desire to have someone be the leader.
The leader, yeah.
And how they talk about it and write about it. So I've been more and more careful about how I talk about the group and, you know, like
That's
the
tricky.
Photos that we send out are all of all three of us and right. the, you know, like
and
the
it's
language
hard, like when you're, yeah, I feel like because you are the lady and then there are two guys, it's, you mm-hmm. know. It's people's first instinct is like, oh, like she's the leader.
Oh, right. 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 Yeah. Yeah. So it's been tricky.
Yeah. And do you guys, I thought I remembered seeing like in your the credits for Little Words, do you guys like work on each other's like other separate projects sometimes?
Yes. Or, like Dustin and Andrew play in this great trumpet player's band, mm-hmm. Paul Dietrich. And I use them for Little Words because, again, comfort zone.
Right, yeah.
These are my people,
they're
and they
people,
understand
yeah.
my music. And this, as a first project, it's like I have to feel like...
You want
to
feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much so. But I'd say now we all are a little more branched and not... It's not like... Oh, why didn't you call me to play in your right. band? You know, like we're pretty secure now, you know,
right,
at
right.
the 5-year mark. It's like, but yeah, I think we definitely overlap and kind of
yeah
do that stuff.
Yeah,
but it's not a little exclusive.
Right. And your guys' second album, it came out last year, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you guys have any like goals for the direction of the band?
Yeah. Well, kind of the thing that we've been digging into as a group has been centered around how we play together.
Uh-huh.
And exploring freedom in how songs are structured
mm-hmm.
and freedom in composing and freedom in interpreting our original music as source material or unknown
right.
patchworks of things. And so as part of that, we're kind of always trying to figure out and dig deeper into like basically how to improvise together as a
yeah.
unit. And for our next record, we're talking about spending more time in the studio in order to get more than just a take of something.
Right.
But to really let things breathe and be, have more options and more studio playtime.
Gotcha.
As opposed to just like getting a take of each
right.
thing.
And especially when everybody's like low on time and, you know, you have a budget and that kind of thing. I feel like, you know, when I spend time in the studio, whether it's like for my own stuff or for somebody else's stuff, I'm always in this mode of like, okay, like gotta get like
check things off the list.
Right, exactly. Like
yeah.
get through it. Not that, you know, obviously you want to do a good job and like be thorough, but it's really hard to sort of turn off the
efficiency mode.
Exactly.
Yeah. and then you think about how rock bands record.
Right.
What they spend like a couple weeks in the studio, a couple months in the studio.
Yeah.
They come back in and they do stuff and they let it breathe and
yeah.
they play with the music in that space.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is something that just, you know, both financially and aesthetically, there's this sense for jazz music or for other kinds of music that you don't have to do, you don't need that much time. You
right.
just get it done, get the take and move on and accept
yeah.
what you have. So we're kind of using this record, I think, as a way of, can we borrow a little bit more from the space and the breath that rock
yeah,
bands have in the
absolutely.
Studio or the sense of feeling like you can play.
Like you have the time and the space and mm-hmm. yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an exciting next step for
yeah
the band, which is cool.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Do you, do you guys have like an estimated time when you're gonna like do some of this recording? And
I would guess that we would have a record at least in the works within the next year. Nice. Yeah, that's kind of been our vibe, is to like every couple of years to put something out. So
cool.
We did a tour a couple weeks ago, and mm-hmm. Through Wisconsin up to Minneapolis and back, and we have enough material. We have more than enough material for the next record. So it's kind of like,
yeah.
Okay, it's
you're
time,
just like raring
time to
go.
Unload it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So among your other projects, you have this collaboration going with James Falzone mm-hmm. called Wayfaring. Can you explain a little bit how this came to be?
Yeah. It's a pretty precious story. So let's see. First, I got a Facebook message from James Falzone back in a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And he, at the time, was a church music director. Uh-huh. And he has this really cool band of beautiful musicians and improvisers that play at this church.
Whoa.
Kind of wild and awesome.
Yeah.
And he asked if I would come and be like a guest and play.
Oh, wow.
So we had not met, but he, I think, just is a welcoming and mm-hmm. cool dude. So we played together in that context, and it was fun. And I did that maybe once or twice a couple of months later. And then I got an email from Constellation, and they were planning a night called 9-2, which was 9 duos that were all going to play short improv. Like, actually, I don't even know if it had to be improvised, but I think the idea, maybe it was. So basically, 9 duos was they would get people to put together duets with people they had not yet really played with.
Oh, okay.
And then it was just 9 different groups throughout the night, and it was on September 2nd, so that's where 9-2 came from.
Oh, okay, wah, okay. Wah,
wah. And so they asked me to put together a duo with someone that I had not really improvised with. And so at first I was thinking of my core people, right? Comfort
right.
level.
Yeah.
And I want to say that just like my first go-to people couldn't do it or something. So then I was like, maybe I should go out of my comfort zone. I remember being in my car, like debating whether or not I should call James. It was like I was in junior high and I was asking someone to go to a dance, you know, like he's not going to want to go. He's not going to want to play with me, or like this stupid, he's important, or, you know,
like I am not cool.
Right. Yeah. 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 Like I thought, you know, but so then I like got my guts together and I called him and I was like, do you want to play a short duo set mm-hmm. on this day at Constellation? He was like, oh, sure.
Oh my gosh.
You know what I'm like?
I feel like I've been in that spot so many times where I'm like, I want to ask somebody to do something with me, but like, I don't know, I'm not cool enough.
Right. And I'm like totally on team get over ourselves.
Right.
And to just, you know, like,
yeah.
Yeah. And so then it turned out that they were going to record it and then make a CD out of it.
Oh, okay.
And so I tell James this and he's like, oh, well, we should get some stuff together then. You know, like oh,
like it's going to be documented.
Mm-hmm. So we got together before the show and we just assembled some songs I had written and some songs that he had written, and we kind of wove them together with improvisation, and we had a nice little, like it's like 10 minutes or something.
Oh,
like that.
Great.
And so we played and it was well received. Like there, I mean, a lot of people were there because a lot of people were playing.
Right.
Like, so a lot of the community was there. And I think because we got like the, oh, that was hip, you know, from people that we were our colleagues
Your
and peers.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, well, we should do it again. And we played again. I think we played again at Constellation, and we played at the Hideout, and we just played at all of the spots. And then we decided we should make a record, and then mm-hmm. we were a real band, and we played at the Hyde Park Jazz Festival. And,
yeah.
So yeah, it totally came out of like a forced environment where it's play with someone that you don't usually
like,
play
oh, okay.
with. And it really kind of bloomed in a beautiful way. And he lives in Seattle now. So
oh, he does. Okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He, so I also got to kind of, we got our band together and had, again, a lot of rehearsals.
Yeah.
But we, it was during the time that he was transitioning his, himself and his family to Seattle.
Wow.
So that he could be the head of the Cornish College of the Arts Music Department.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, he's in an awesome place, and I'm going to go out to Seattle in November and stuff.
He's so cool. Yeah. Seattle's awesome.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited about it. But yeah, so we have a record that'll be out in the fall. And
oh, excellent.
Keeping it together, even though it's long distance.
All right. Yeah. Keep an eye out. Wayfaring album coming out in the fall. Do you know what's the name of the album?
It'll be called So it's Wayfaring. It's mm-hmm. the band, and the album is called I Move, You Move.
That's perfect. Mm-hmm. So another thing I wanted to ask, and I was like kind of hemming and hawing about how to ask it, because I mean, it's like so many of your collaborations are with men, and it has to, I feel like it has to be addressed that jazz is still so much of, not to put it indelicately, but like a sausage fest. Like it's still,
Dude City.
Yeah, it's absolutely Dude City. And I, you know, I feel hesitant to ask these kinds of questions because it's like, you can't just ask, you know, ladies in jazz. You can't be like, oh, what's it like to be a lady in jazz? Because you're not like, that's expecting you to be the representative of all women in jazz. But like, I mean, you've obviously, you're making a successful career in jazz, and there are still relatively so few women doing that. And, you know, do you feel like coming up and being trained in the kind of environment that happens to be like really dominated by men, do you feel like that's shaped you as an artist, as like a leader, as a businesswoman? Because you do have to be something of a businesswoman.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's affected you in specific ways?
Mm. Well, yeah, and you're right. It's tricky because it's like, I don't want to speak for the community.
Really?
Right, because it's like everyone has a different take and everything. But mm-hmm. I'm happy to share kind of what my personal relationship to like the role of gender in my music and my life. I would say that I started out pretty like blissfully ignorant of the challenges, right? Because I was just a kid that was
and no one's
away.
Telling you like, by the way, like right. if you keep doing this, like
right. And in some ways, I was really fortunate that no one stopped me as a little kid from playing a big masculine instrument,
right?
You know, and I know that there are other people that there would have been like, no, you can't play that. Here's a violin, or
like,
you know,
put that down, little girl,
right? Yeah, and because no one said no,
right?
That's
This is what I
want to
play. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was the first, like, for a while, I was just like, oh, it doesn't matter. And then in college, I was the first lady to attend Eastman as a jazz double bass major. So I was
That's crazy.
So I was the first lady to ever go to Eastman as a jazz bass major. And I think at the time I was just like, oh, that's cool. You know, like, like number one. and it's sure, it's a small program and the jazz department hasn't been around that long, but that's also kind of nuts, right?
It is really nuts.
And since then,
it's been around long enough. Like it's
sure. right. And since then I know that there's been at least one other lady that has majored in jazz that's at Eastman, but you know, I was in small numbers and I was generally one of two or three ladies in the program.
Yeah.
So in terms of, I think how I kind of survived in the environment that I put myself in, right? Mm-hmm. I went to these jazz camps that were mostly guys.
Right.
There would be maybe 5 to 10 girls and 40 to, you know, a million little high school guys running around.
Right.
And at the time you feel cool because you're like, oh yeah, I'm the girl. And so I, you know, I'm unique in that way.
Yeah.
But I also, in reflecting on those times, I think I took on a much more, I emulated the masculinity of the people around me.
Yeah. So you want to like fit in.
Right. Yeah. You kind of had to choose between being super feminine and being not, you know, like like separating yourself from the community yeah. and saying, I'm going to wear these dresses and I'm going to be like this and yeah. I'm going to be a feminine entity in this masculine
and have that be like almost like your thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to discard that mm-hmm. and I'm going to be more masculine mm-hmm. and I'm going to show that I can hang and that I'm right. cool. And so I think I functioned in a way where I could be friends with the dudes. Like I could hang and I could make a joke and I could,
right.
you know, like I could dish it.
And I'm a chill
girl. Right. yeah. Right. And in a lot of ways that, at the time that feels like who you are.
Yeah.
That feels like, oh, that's just the kind of person that I am. It's like, I'm more like this, but with more reflection and becoming a more open person,
yeah.
you start to see that really was more of a coping mechanism or more of a, more of
an effect of your environment,
a tool or a way of being accepted and surviving and being okay. So I don't regret that I have those skills, mm-hmm. but I also acknowledge that a lot of that was because of my gender. I felt like I should change how I interact with people so that I could be accepted.
Yeah.
But the important thing is how that translates into music making.
Right.
Because especially with improvised music, I mean, the whole point of it is to be free.
Right.
And to be able to feel uninhibited and not like you have to play a certain role.
Yeah.
And so I think for a while I equated strength with being aggressive.
Uh-huh.
Or I equated femininity with being melodic or, you know, like different elements of music took on different genders.
Yeah.
And sometimes I was, you know, I think I was praised for being really melodic and blah, blah, blah. Mm. And that felt like, oh, well, it's 'cause I'm a girl.
Right.
Or, you know, I played really strong and assertively because I wanted to prove that
like
I could.
Mm-hmm. you're one of the guys. Right. Yeah.
And so a lot of my current work, I think, is trying to shed the feeling of I need to prove that I'm feminine or prove that I'm masculine.
Right. You're just you, mm-hmm. and a really right. good musician.
Like, and then I have all of these things that these are all tools and options, mm-hmm. and like there's sincerity in elements of all of those different. Aggressive or delicate or whatever. Yeah. Feeling free to kind of be fluid in that and not feel like, oh, well, as a woman, I need to be making art like this.
Right.
Or I need to be making art like this as a reaction to not being a man.
Or feel like you have to somehow, you know, compensate, like for lack of a better word.
Right.
Like
mm-hmm. Because that's a hindrance. And that, exactly. that's taking away from the ultimate goal of what we're trying to do.
Absolutely.
It's in a lot of ways I've become a lot more aware of how my gender affects things. And but without letting my gender be my identity.
Absolutely.
Which is, I think, it's tricky, right? Because there is that feeling of like, well, as a female artist, this, I must be doing all this because I'm female.
Right.
And so I, in some ways, it's accepting kind of accepting that there's this big spectrum of things that you can take from or leave.
Yeah.
And that I'm not letting down my gender if I have something that's really aggressive
and
that I have to say.
And you're like a whole person. So
right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, yeah, there's enough to dive into within yourself that you don't have to lean too far on the gender.
In spectrum. Like any one direction. Yeah.
Right. But then again, like I could go off on another tangent about being an educator and how just in general girl students are treated versus male students.
Right.
But I'm maybe my short thought about that is that there's been certain culture around learning jazz music, right? About like just get out there and do it. Like go like
right.
And at my female students have as a kind of like in on average,
yeah,
generally have much more of a concern about their safety in that and it's unfair, I think, to assume the same kind of like inherent just go for it.
Yeah.
For male students as female students. Or vice versa. So I think there are lots of different ways of cultivating creative, improvising artist people.
Yeah.
And that I think we could probably explore a lot more the like the ways in which the female artist can be cultivated and
like shaped. So many different kinds of jazz and so many different kinds of improvisation. It's very much like not a one size fits all kind of genre. So why should we approach like educating in that same way? Why should we approach educating in a one size fits all kind of way?
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or one size fits all genders. I don't know.
Right.
But
mm-hmm. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, my first steps towards being a creative musician and composer and like person, mm-hmm. We're very focused on safety and comfort.
Yeah.
I needed to feel safe in the words that I was singing.
Yeah.
And I needed to feel safe in the band that I was putting together for my first project.
Yeah.
And in some ways I think it's because there's more pressure to not fail.
Yeah.
Because you're an exceptional person in the, you know, like I'm one of five ladies that I know that are putting records out. So right. It has to be good.
It has to be good or else it's like, oh, like I feel like other people, some people are so ready to, and it's a, I don't know why this is the first thing that comes to mind, but when you hear male comedians talking about female comedians sometimes, how they're like, oh, like women aren't funny. There's gotta be this similar pressure among like female comics to like,
yeah,
always have like a killer performance like every single time. And I feel like it must be very similar for female jazz musicians.
Right.
Like I gotta kill it every single time. Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's harder to know if what you're doing is good or it's harder to, for me, I've had a hard time accepting like the critical feedback that I've gotten. So like if someone reviews what I've done, or anything, like you take the positives as affirmative action.
Right.
And you take the,
like, oh, are you just throwing me a bone?
Like, right. Like, are you just impressed because I can function or, or is it, do you really appreciate what,
right.
How do I know that what I'm doing is good if everyone just thinks I'm amazing for existing? Right. You know, you become much more wary of positive feedback.
Yeah.
And you're super like ready to jump on anything that's negative because you're like, oh, that must be true.
Right.
You know, that feels real. I would say that you have to become, especially as a lady, you have to be like the gatekeeper of feedback and like be honest with
what you're doing. Meanwhile, you're just like fucking trying to play some bass. Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of, there's more complexity, I think, than less.
Oh man. Well, on a lighter note, you have some things coming up. You have a couple of things. And please tell me if there are things I've missed here. You on May 10th, you this jam session. It's at the Jazz Institute of Chicago. What is that?
Well, the Jazz Institute of Chicago hosts a monthly jam session for students during the school year.
Oh.
So it's a place where kids who play jazz from all over the city and mm-hmm. the suburbs can come together and jam. Nice. And it's like the most beautiful educational event that you could ever witness. So I play bass in the house band.
Oh, okay.
With Marcus Evans on drums, Gerard Harris plays saxophone and hosts, and Robert Irving III plays piano.
Nice.
So it's like a beautiful educational thing that's open to the public.
So these kids have like this really great foundation for just like jamming out.
Right. And to connect with other people their age that like this music mm-hmm. and to connect with us because we're out there making this music and it's really great. So the last one of the school year is May 10th. And so, if anyone has young students that are learning how to improvise and they want a real like jam session setting, the Cultural Center, May 10th is the spot.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And you have a, is it that same day that you have a Twin Talks gig?
Yeah. So Twin Talk is playing at Cafe Mustache later that night in Logan Square in support of Joe Policastro Trio. Mm-hmm. And I think we play first, but the show starts around 9. It'll be good. It'll be the first show since we finished our tour. So
nice.
We're going to get weird. It's going to be nice.
Let's get weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have any other like shows or projects coming up that you're excited about?
Yeah. I am currently doing a residency-ish thing called Set Free, which is part of Lynx Hall.
Okay.
And so this dancer, choreographer, beautiful artist, Jessica Marasa, and I are doing a 6-month-long duo project called Evergreen. And so every month on the last Monday of the month, we play a short, like 20-minute showing along with the 4 other groups that are doing residencies.
Oh, okay.
So that's every last Monday of the month at Constellation at 7. Yes. So we're improvising as dancer and bass vocal.
That sounds awesome.
Mm-hmm. And you can kind of watch the progress continue over the 6 months. So this will be our 3rd showing.
Oh, great.
This next Monday.
Okay. Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with me today. Check out Katie's website. It's katieernstmusic.com, right?
That's right.
Okay. And check out her website. Look at her events. See what's coming up. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me this week. Episode 8 comes out on Thursday, May 4th. So check out OddPod on Facebook and Twitter. The Twitter handle is @OddPodShy, AudPodChi. So check us out on Facebook and Twitter for updates.